All right, we're rolling now. So this is where you crank it up a notch.
Okay.
Right now you're down here at a 5.
Yeah.
I need you at a 9.5.
I'll give you a 6.5. We'll split the difference.
I don't think you're good at math. Hello and welcome to episode 85 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Vancouver, British Columbia. And with me, as always,
is Adam.
You're still at like a 6.
Okay. Is it 85 for sure? I feel like last time was 85.
Well, I think last time was 84.
Okay.
Should we check online?
It's okay. You're probably right.
Yeah. My wife has never said that.
Yeah. Yeah. Words you won't hear at home.
You never ever hear that happen. What's going on? Since you're drinking coffee, I'll start.
Okay, you start. I was enjoying a delicious sip of coffee.
Coffee tastes good.
You wanted me at an 8.
I went camping. We went camping. Took the family camping this week.
Yeah? Whereabouts?
Alice Lake Provincial Park.
That's Provincial near campground. Whistler, right? Kind of.
Just past Squamish. Just past Squamish and Brackendale.
Trying to give people a frame of reference. They're probably not going to know where that is, but Whistler, everybody's heard of.
Yeah.
Or most people have heard of it.
Most people. It's on the road to Whistler.
Okay.
So a lot of things. Camping. First of all, Owls Lake is awesome.
Okay.
I highly recommend it, especially if you can get in the provincial campground.
Because it's cheaper?
I don't really know. I think it is.
Usually the provincial campgrounds are cheaper.
And it's just, it's gorgeous. They keep it up really well. I think you have to book in advance. Like, if you could book in advance, I highly recommend that, because it fills up. Like, you can't find a spot in the high season, which we're in.
And you went during a good period of weather, too, which would make it even busier than normal.
Right. Now, we didn't, because we were in Germany at the time, when you have to book, usually I think it's around March or April or whenever. Like, basically, it opens up for reservations, we'll just say March, okay? Google it if you want. And it fills up in a week. Like, they'll fill up the whole season. So we couldn't really do that, didn't know when we'd be going and all that blah, blah, blah. So we kind of went midweek. No, we didn't kind of. We actually went midweek and decided to go really early and get one of the first-come, first-serve spots.
Right. They keep a certain number of those?
Yeah, I think like 2/3 or 3/4 of the spots are reserved. Yeah, I thought your wife hit the mute on that.
Yeah, apparently she didn't.
Thanks a lot for being a liar.
You keep talking and I'll see if I can figure out where the mute is.
Right. So anyways, we went up Tuesday, early Tuesday morning, and got the last spot available. So that's the long version of that story.
Great.
Yeah.
Do I sound like I'm interested?
No.
Okay.
So we got that, but the good part was that we were camping with your tent and air mattress.
Right, and you took good care of it?
Ish.
I claim that it's the 1 minute instant tent. Did you set it up in a minute or less?
It does claim 60 seconds, and yes I did.
And was there instructions in there?
No. Yeah, I didn't read them.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever read the manual for anything?
Not usually.
No.
Not unless I get stumped with mavericking it.
Yeah, that's true. I'm mavericking it. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. That's what I call
That's what it should be called. I do not read the manual for almost any. We're going to have a show about that, though, later on, about why you should read the manual. Don't do what Donnie Don't does. I don't read the manual.
I read the manual sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, my whole thing is, if somebody can figure out how to invent it, I can figure out how to use it. I can guess where things are in the supermarket because, for instance, certain things should be next to certain things.
Yeah.
And that's how I go. Anyways, so your tent, I did set it up in under 60 seconds. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
It says you can take it down in 60 seconds, which you can. Getting it back in the bag is a little bit of a jockeying position, though. That, if you don't count that, 60 seconds.
Okay.
So that's, but yeah, it's awesome. You have a self-inflating air mattress.
Doesn't everybody?
I've never seen one.
Oh.
Didn't know they existed.
They're awesome.
Yeah. They are awesome. Basically, all you do is take it out of the box, flip a switch, and it blows itself up.
And like, again, about 2 minutes?
And I feel like calling it a self-inflating air mattress probably would have covered what I just said.
Yeah.
I chose to expand on that. Okay. See, what it does is, it self-inflates.
Well, you have to flip a switch.
You flip a switch. And, yeah, it's awesome. So we use those two things, and they are been given back in pristine condition.
Yep.
But I was just thinking, like, your family and my family, we would become the superheroes of camping.
Explain.
I am a great camper. Like, I'm like, you know, Boy Scout, sort of mixed with a ninja and a Navy SEAL all in one. And I promise I am not over-exaggerating. I'm not overplaying that hand.
Okay.
I am really good at camping. Like, when it comes to tying knots, I know at least three of them. Can you tie a bowline?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here we are. Yeah. So anyway, so I got that going. I am, that's all about me.
I don't have much to contribute. I would probably sit in a lawn chair with the best of them, my feet up, roasting marshmallows.
Yeah, but you have the best equipment.
Oh, I have good equipment.
So you and your wife bring that. Like, you guys have the best equipment. Like, you're like Batman in that regard. And I'm whatever, I don't know, Spider-Man mixed with Superman or something like that. Little Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But I'm actually, you know, I'm a good cook when it comes to camping and all that stuff. I make really, like, out of simple things.
Wow.
Promise. My wife is very good at planning.
So is my wife.
That's what I'm saying. So everything would be sorted. Like we when we left there after we stayed for 3 days, there was like no food left. Like,
wow.
We
just,
you know,
efficient meal planning.
Well, the last 15 minutes before we left, we just stuffed our faces. No, it was. Well, she's German, so guess what? She's efficient.
Yeah.
But everything was dialed in perfect. And you know, we didn't bring too many pots and pans. The one large pot was what we used to wash all the other dishes in.
Yeah.
And so she claims, like, my wife always claims that she would be a good homeless person. Like, she functions very well in that. So I'm just thinking,
how's she in sleeping in a cardboard box?
In a cardboard box? She doesn't like the tent that much. I don't know how the cardboard box would go. Because unlike Europe, when you camp in Europe, it doesn't really get dark.
Oh.
I mean, you're never too far from a city. And then we camped in Tofino a couple years ago, and it gets dark.
Yeah.
Really dark. And she does not like that.
Not with the bears roaming.
The bears, that's the other thing too, is like, because there's bears at Alice Lake.
Yeah.
There's bear traps. They had a bear trap up there and stuff because bears have been spotted. And so they recommend that you keep a bear campground. Bear aware, they call it. Which means don't leave food out. Don't leave your cookware out. Like, you know, so we basically every night cleaned everything up, put it in the truck, and locked it away in the cab of the truck so that the bears, we were the only ones. Everybody else around was like smearing their tent with bacon grease. And it's like, what are you doing?
A big steak up on a tent pole.
Yeah, leaving everything out. And I thought it's good for us because they're not going to come to ours, right? They'll go to everybody else and eat them. And so, but no, we're good. She doesn't like the bears. And so at night, when it gets really dark, she swears the bears are outside, like playing cards outside our tent or something. Which they don't. Bears are not good at cards.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, next time we're here, we'll team up and be like the Legion of Doom for, no, what's the good one for superheroes?
The Justice League?
Geek test. Can't believe you answered that.
There's also the Avengers, right? Made a movie.
Sure.
Pictures? Did you take pictures while you were camping?
Yep.
With film camera or digital or both?
Both. That goes into a little section of the show I like to call, hey, what did you shoot this week?
Oh, okay, so this wasn't part of that? This was just you talking about camping? This would be a really long show if now you have to talk about what did you shoot this week.
No, I shot camping pictures.
Oh, okay. So that I was kind of the backstory?
I don't know. I just wanted to tell everybody what a good camper was. And plus, I can hold my breath for a long time.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. So if anyone...
Everyone wants to go camping with you, give you a shout.
Yeah, bring your 60-second tent.
Okay.
Because I don't have it. I have the 4-hour tent. Like, when we camped, we camped on our honeymoon. That's the kind of move we did.
Not me and you. You mean your wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For the purpose of this story, sure. Let's call her my wife. Part of our honeymoon was camping in Croatia.
Yeah.
And we drove down and then we stayed in hotels and stuff too. But putting the tent up and down was unfun.
Yeah.
Because we stayed in a few spots, right? This, we really were thinking we had a time machine and B, this tent to go do it again because it would have been rad.
Yeah.
So there's that. So yeah, I shot a lot of, I brought both cameras. I brought my 40D. with a 30mm lens, and I brought a film camera with a 50mm lens. That's it. I didn't bring anything else, no flashes or anything like that. Yeah, and shot a ton of photos.
Okay, and do you have any takeaways from your experience? Something you would have done differently? Something you did that you think was good?
I took a lot of photos.
Okay.
No, the reason I took a lot, I think, is our daughter discovered the lake, and she liked the lake. So we took a lot of photos of her splashing around in the lake. Other than that, I had some issues with the film camera, the shutter starting to stick, the shutter curtain.
So that's time to get a new film camera?
Well, you don't get a new one, but this one might need to get overhauled. I'm not sure what's going on. It's getting a weird gradient effect with exposures. So I don't know. I really don't know what's happening. So that's it. That's the takeaway.
Okay.
So I shot that. Lots of other family photos because we're still on vacation. I shot a wedding.
Oh.
On Sunday night.
Yeah.
That was a paid job.
Yeah. Was that good? It was kind of, what night was it?
Sunday.
Bit overcast, right?
Yep. Yes. We had overcast. The sun came out right during portrait session, of course.
Yeah.
So I still had to look for open shade. I was all excited with the whole day because it was an evening wedding, as it was. I thought, okay, great. The wedding's at 5. So we'll do, but of course it was 5 till 5:20. And then we just went out and took pictures for about, we had about 30 minutes for portrait sessions, which was not a lot of time.
Was it a big wedding party?
No. No, they each had one, and then her folks. So it was only 6 people, including folks. So we got to shoot that out pretty quick. But that was the main reason that the show is coming out Wednesday instead of Monday. It's because our schedules didn't work out because I had to work Sunday night. So there's that.
Yes, it's your fault.
It's my fault. And other than that, it was a pretty standard wedding as far as... I don't do a lot of weddings, a lot of wedding photos. But I knew these people. It was a full paid gig and all that. So there's that. No real good stories about...
Nothing.
Oh, I used your lens.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, mine is still in the shop.
Still?
Still in the shop. I haven't got it. But I guess they have to wait for the part from Canon. And so Adam was nice enough to lend me his 70-200. Which I used.
Yes.
To hammer in the tent pegs.
I'm glad. Glad you got some use out of it. And what did I shoot, you ask?
I'm not done with me yet.
Oh, God.
No, just joking. I am done with me.
And I went to, also took a trip this weekend. Also, I'm saying when you went camping, you took that trip. I went to the interior of British Columbia to visit family this weekend. So we went to Vernon, BC, which is where my in-laws live. So we did that. And speaking of bears, on our drive between Chilliwack and Merritt, right by the side of the road, a baby bear
came to say.
Yeah, so we don't know where the mama was. But the funny thing was, is it was almost like, you know, when you see a dog at the side of the road.
Yeah.
Like, 100 yards up, Lisa says, hey, what's that by the side of the road? Like, literally on the shoulder of the road. And I said, that's not a dog, that's a bear. And as we got closer, it was a good size baby bear. And about 50 yards before we came to the bear was two cars on the shoulder of the road. I guess one had a flat tire.
Oh.
And so as we drove by at 120 clicks, we thought...
Speed limit's 110.
Yeah, speed limit's 110. We thought, that baby bear is headed in their direction. And the baby bear is not the problem. It's, the mama can't be too far behind.
I've encountered bears before.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of mama bears.
No?
Unless... the kids are there.
Yeah, because that's when she freaks out.
Baby bear, fine. Mama bear, fine. But when you are right with the baby and the mama's behind, you're in trouble.
Yeah, so I don't know what happened. I'm assuming they got eaten. But we kept going and we never thought about it. So, yeah, so anyways, that was my bear story. I haven't seen that. I was saying to Sarah and Jack, because we had enough notice to say, hey, look out your window, you're going to see a baby bear. That's the first time I've seen a bear out of a zoo. So that's the first live bear that I've seen. And again, it was super close.
Wow.
You know, enough that I was kind of worried that, this thing could just dart in front of our car and that would be kind of messy. So,
that would be awful.
Yeah. So anyway, so as we drove up and behind us was a big, I don't know what you call big rig, big huge truck, and the sound of that big truck going by, the bear basically ran into the ditch, which was 10 yards from the shoulder of the road, and I'm sure headed right up the road to eat those other travelers. So
yep.
Yeah, so there is that. So for as far as photos go, went to the interior and were visiting our cousins who have my niece and nephew, my cousins to my kids have twin three-year-olds. So there was a lot of pictures taken of the cousins playing together and a few family portraits. I did shoot one group shot with 10 people on, I think it was 10 people with four kids, six. Yeah, I think there was 10 people in a group photo around a tractor.
Uh-huh.
And I shot that, which was
love that tractor.
Bit of a challenge shooting. I used the sun as backlight, and then shot two bare flashes straight into it to try to, because I didn't want anyone to be closing their eyes staring into the sun. So I flipped it around and kind of used the sun on sort of up and high on the sort of get the rim light on the shoulders, and then I fired two bare flashes right into everybody to try to counterbalance that light. I think I did a pretty good job. A little bit of shadows because I didn't have light stands or anything. So the best part of that story is it's out in a field that's about waist high with grass, and happened to have too many things in my hand and didn't realize it until I got back, but dropped our keys, which we needed to go home, in that field, and spent the next hour and a half trying to find, because literally, I mean, it was the needle in a haystack. It was the...
How late in the day?
It was early, so it was the morning. Okay. So, but we looked forever, and I had given up. And then I thought, okay, I lost my wedding ring at Christmas in the snow. And right when I was going to give up, I basically found it, went against all odds. And so Lisa was kind of packing it in and heading back going, forget it, like it's not going to happen.
What were we
going
to do?
Well, we had a car key, so we could have physically gotten home. But it was going to be a giant pain in the butt. We had to pick up our other car, which was going to be an issue. So the reality of it was I wasn't prepared to pack it in just yet. And I thought, great, she's quitting, which means I'm going to find it because that's when it happens. And I even said that to her. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, stop looking, I'm gonna find it. And 2 minutes after she gave up, an hour and a half into the look, bingo, found that little bit of light reflecting way down deep off the key ring and pulled it out. Everyone was like, oh my god, I can't believe you found it, because we looked for a long time.
Wow.
So yeah, that was
my advice in that situation, is don't lose your keys.
Yeah. And you know what happened is I was doing the run-in and the keys were in my pocket, or I think they were in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And I'm running back and forth from the where the camera is to get in the shot. And again, I'm high-kneeing it because the grass is up to my waist. And I think all the jostling and the keys fell out of my pocket. The good news was I had a pretty good idea where to look because the tractor created tracks, and kind of like, you know, I was the man tracker. I was able to kind of narrow down because this field is humongous. Uh-huh. And it shows up in our challenge photo, but you don't get an idea of how long the grass is. But I had an idea of where to look. And even knowing where to look, it still took an hour and a half to find
you those are keys. A tracker.
Yeah.
Who are those guys?
Yeah. So anyway, so there's my story. There's lots of pictures though taken. A lot of flash pictures. I was doing a lot of experimenting with light. So
how do you like group photos? Not light. How do you like them?
How do I like doing them?
Yeah.
I find that with the right group, I don't have too big of an issue. And my kids are pretty cooperative, so that helps. And I limit the number I do. Like, there's one family photo. I said, I'm going to take one family photo of everyone together when the kids are included. When it's adults, no problem. But when the kids are included, there was one for the weekend where everyone was together.
Yeah.
And then I basically, I set the lighting up before anyone gets there. And then basically when they get there, it's just get it done in 2 minutes. So
I hate doing group photos, just in general.
And how come?
I just feel like, for me, no one ever looks at group photos and goes, man, the lighting is awesome. It's always sort of meatball surgery.
Yeah.
Like you're making the best of it under you know, bad situation. And, you know, like you get photographers will look at it and go, wow, that's good, because they appreciate how bad that situation is. And it's like, hey, everyone's kind of got a nice little rim light from the sun like you did, and you know, you can see everybody's face and all that. But in terms of lighting ratios and like really punchy lighting, it's tough to get good stuff.
Yeah.
And I always also find that whenever I do group photos, it's always punctuated by like 25 single photos. So I have to think, if I'm there to light one photo and take 2 hours doing one photo, no problem. But in that 2 hours, I then have to break off and do a whole bunch of other setups, so I don't get to put the time in.
I think the challenge with kids, the other variable for me is the time that they're awake. my kids are in bed 7:30, and most of the I shot some group adult shots the night before, kind of during magic hour, and the color and the light is fantastic. The kids are in bed.
Right.
I can't reproduce that unless I'm going to keep them up, and then everybody's going to pay for that.
Right.
So I shoot it at, you know, 9:30 in the morning when everyone's up, which is a much more difficult lighting situation. And then when other people look at it, like you say, the non-photographers of the world, they say, well, why didn't you just make it look like that? Because that one is so awesome. I mean, it's clear to see. And the answer is because the kids are asleep.
I have the Instagram on my iPhone, and it just, yeah, it looks like that. And it's like, wow, it doesn't look quite like that. No, the only way around that is to fly somewhere and have them be jet lagged, and then they'll be up at the right time, magic hour. But you still pay.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. So there you go. Wow. Big week.
Yeah.
And we didn't even hang out and shoot together.
Do we need a topic, or can we just shut it down right now?
I feel like us.
I feel like we're going in on a high right now.
Yeah. We got more to go, man. This is going to be longer. We're already at the 90-minute mark. I'm going to have to cut some of this.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about my blog post on the two hosers then.
Oh, did it happen?
No.
It didn't happen. Wow. Shocker. It's a big surprise.
My blog post is going to be the picture I just took.
Mm-hmm.
Except I'm going to post it in 3 months from now.
This week's challenge, Sunny 16.
Right.
What is, why don't I just answer that? Why don't you ask me what it is?
What is the Sunny 16, Al?
I'm glad you asked, Adam. The Sunny 16 is a quick metering rule. Not a rule, but a guideline.
Okay.
More so if it got its start sort of, I guess, when shooting film, and you don't have a meter. So your meter's broken, and you want to, you know, have a nice starting point.
Okay. So it's sunny outside?
It's sunny. Let's say it's sunny outside. Bright sun.
Okay.
If you set your camera to aperture 16, f/16, the shutter speed will be the inverse of the film's ISO.
Okay, so if the ISO is 100, then the shutter speed will be?
1/100th.
Okay, and if the ISO is 200, the shutter speed will be?
Around an 80th or something.
No.
I'm not good at math. No, but because I don't always round up when I use pi.
I'm confused now.
What? I don't even use pi. I use 22/7, but that's me. No, it is 1/200th.
Okay.
And this is like right across the board. It's an easy start. So if you're shooting in the sun, that's a great way to start. So I mean, everybody's got a meter in their digital camera, or it's on automatic and it meters for itself. But sometimes you want just a good starting point, and especially when you're shooting film, which last week you did.
Yes.
It's and we didn't have a meter. Oh, we did have a meter.
We did.
I brought my incident meter. But if you don't have a meter, and oftentimes I don't. Like, I didn't take a meter camping with me. Everything I just shot by eye. Now, Sunny 16, it was sunny out, so that's a great place to start. So what that means is I shot ISO 400 film. My old film camera doesn't actually have 1/400th. It has 1/500th. So I kind of went down to 11/16 split. That's my starting point.
Okay.
Okay? And from there, you can move it. Like, you can count clicks. So if you can go up to 1/8000th of a second, now you're going to count the clicks up to there and do the corresponding move on the f-stop.
Okay.
It's still going to be the same exposure. You don't need a meter. So there you go.
Because I don't shoot at f/16 very often.
No, nor do I. But let's have a look at the this week's challenge photos. You want to start, or shall I?
How about... Uh-oh.
Did you break it?
There we are. Let's talk about yours.
Ours, you know what is funny, is ours are almost identical. Not identical exactly, because we're in two different places.
They're similar. How about that?
They're almost identisimilar. They're very similar. In fact, we both took them in portrait style. We have the sky included.
Trees.
This was me at the lake. I took this.
It's not actually you.
No, I'm behind the camera. Yeah. And I was going to use a picture I took with film, but ultimately I specifically took this photo for this challenge. No other reason. I went out there on the day at the lake and snapped this photo.
Okay.
So, what do you want to know?
Not much. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I like the blue sky. I think the exposure looks good. So you did this at ISO 100?
Sure. I forget now.
Okay, but probably 100.
I think it was ISO 100.
Because why not? Why wouldn't you do it at 100?
Yeah, it's that bright.
Yeah.
You know, and so I didn't need the shutter speed of, you know, 1/1000th.
Yeah.
So
unless that guy standing in the picture was ready to make a beeline for the water and cannonball it.
No, I don't know what he was doing. Like
it looks like he's scratching his behind.
No, I think he saw me. And I was waiting for him to leave to take this picture because there was something going on. Like, the wind had come up and blown that umbrella over. So there's a little story going on over here,
right,
with this family here, with Jake or Elwood Blues, whoever that guy is. And then, so that was kind of going on. And I wanted to get, you know, a little bit of lake life with the forest, the green forest. And then, whatever, I think that might be Black Tusk.
I don't know.
Okay, then it's Black Tusk. That mountain in the background with the glacier.
Sure.
Which, you know, middle of August, we got snow, we got trees, we got lake, which I swam in multiple times every day. It's a great lake to swim in.
Swimmer's itch?
I did not get that.
Yeah, you will.
No, I don't get that. I know people who do get that from this lake, but no, it doesn't happen. But anyway, so he's walking out, and I'm waiting patiently to take this picture, and he just stood there, looked over at me, and wouldn't move. But he wanted to move, but didn't want to get out of the picture. I guess he wanted to be in the challenge photo.
Right, I'm sure he did.
So I took it, and then he moved. I took it again, and I thought, well, nah, forget that. You're in. You're in this week.
I'll leave you in.
I think he's the dad from Different Strokes, if you look closely. So good to see Conrad Bain getting some work still.
All right.
So that's it. Other than that, there's not much to talk about. The exposure is, I would say, bang on.
Yeah, looks good to me.
I didn't mess with this. There's nothing in post. That's basically out of the camera.
Okay.
Slight crop. There was a slight crop because there was a bag in the shot I didn't like. But other than that, did not touch it.
All right.
Now, something you may not have noticed if you look close. What's going on right there? And right there, and right there. I'm pointing to the blue sky.
There's little, like, spots.
What's going on with that?
I don't know.
Sensor dust.
Oh.
I got dust on my sensor, and I try to keep it clean if you can. But it happens. You get dust on there.
So you need it cleaned.
It's nice to have it clean. It doesn't show up until you get to around, I'm going to say F8-ish. And at F16, it really starts to show up. So you recall last week, I had my camera out at the beach.
Yeah.
I guarantee I got some dust in there.
Did you take the lens off while you were there? Can it get in while your lens is still on?
It can still get in.
Oh.
Didn't
know that.
It's unlikely, but there's just so much dust going on that likely got in. But that's when it starts to show up.
So are you going to go get it cleaned, or you've had enough to do with the camera shops that you're going to just...
Yeah, I'm going to take five on that.
Avoidance, yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's not going to hurt anything, right, other than your photos?
Other than my photos, and you can Photoshop those out or clone them out, whatever program you use. Also,
what does the automated sensor cleaning thing do? Does it do anything?
It does a little bit. It does a little vibration move that basically shakes the any dust off of it, and it does a really good job. Not perfect in this case, because every time you turn your camera on and off, it engages. You can do it automatically. You can do it manually. And I do it from time to time, but, you know, in this case, this might actually take care of it. But I've had my 40D for almost five years now. I've never had it professionally cleaned.
Okay.
I've never actually cleaned the sensor besides the vibration thing.
Do you have any idea what it costs to get it clean?
More than I'm going to spend.
Okay.
If it gets really dirty, I shoot everything at F1.8 and nobody knows. So there
okay.
you go. All right, yours. Wow. Identical, except inland.
Same picture. This is in the backyard. Like, as I was explaining where I took the tractor picture, this is in the backyard of my in-laws. So this is actually their backyard. They've got some farmland. And so you see right where the grass ends and it changes to, you know, that lighter color field.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, where their property ends. So this is at the back end of their property. And you can see in the very, very small spot on the bottom left corner, a deer. There was three of them in their backyard. So I took a picture of this and I called this photo, "Why I shouldn't have lent you my 70-200mm lens."
You should buy a zoom lens.
Yeah, yeah.
You should get a telephoto lens.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh man,
yeah.
This would be a situation where I would like to have that lens. But so what I did...
Now I feel bad dropping yours.
Yeah, you should feel bad. But I had my 30mm and 50mm lenses with me. And I saw the deers hovering around in the back and the kids were watching from the window. And this is a couple hundred yards from their house. And so I thought, okay, 30 mil is useless to me here. Yeah. I'm going to get the zoom of the 50 and I'm going to get twice as close. So, or you do the math, not quite twice as close.
Sure.
But I went in the house, got the 50 millimeter, which hasn't been on my camera in months. And then I started the trek through the waist-high grass to get a picture. And the whole way, there's only one deer in this picture, but there were three. I think this was the mama and there was two babies. They watched me the whole way down. And when I got close enough, I don't know, 150 yards out, then they all bolted. So that would have been the situation where you'd want to have a 200 millimeter lens instead of 50.
Yeah.
Because this is cropped. So had I taken the picture... This is probably cropped three times, so this is probably... I might have gotten a little closer with the 200 millimeter, but then I could have cropped that, and you'd be standing right next to that deer. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I thought there's no critique when I had to do this with my 50 millimeter lens, so you
should... did a good job based on that. Now, if I was able to rent one, which they're all booked up,
right?
Then you would have had it. So okay. let's blame the rental houses for not being sufficiently stocked during wedding season.
Right, on a week before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Canon could have shipped that part a little bit faster.
Right.
And I could have got my lens back.
Yeah. And then you'd be staring at a fantastic challenge picture from me. So
dear Canon.
So, yeah. There you go.
Also, I like the picture. I mean, you nailed the exposure. What else? I don't see any sensor dust. So, you're clearly better at cleaning it than I am.
Yeah.
You know.
That's it. So move on.
Moving on.
All right.
This week's topic
is
extra long podcasts.
Yeah.
Why people hate them.
We're going to take a poll question of when people stop listening.
You know what the worst thing is I've actually cut stuff out of the notes. I've skipped over it because we've taken so long.
Should we go to Adam Shoots Film?
Yes, go to Adam Shoots Film. Well, that's what happened last week.
Or
you shot film.
Yeah, I think you have a separate. There you go. These are the
what?
Ones.
What? Yeah, that's the one. What did we do after we shot film?
I think you called it processing the film.
I didn't name it that.
Yeah.
We processed.
It's not developing the film. That's a different thing.
It's a good point. Well, is more to it than just developing.
Is developing when you make the pictures, like when you make the prints? That's developing?
I think the whole thing's called processing.
Even that part?
I think technically it would be called developing, even though it's not just developing.
Because you're developing the film, but you're not developing prints.
But we're doing more. Yeah, we didn't do prints. So here's what happened. This week's topic is Adam in the dark room.
But it wasn't really a dark room.
Let's start with that. That's the first misconception. Everybody says when I tell them, you know, I'm processing my own film at home and are developing my own film, it's usually in Germany, and they ask, hast du ein Dunkelkammer? And no thank you, I've already eaten.
Right.
No, they're saying, do you have a dark room? And what people think is you have to have a dark room, and you can use the red light.
Right.
And you can't. First of all, you need 100% full darkness.
Right.
So what do we use instead of that?
Bag, the developing bag, is it called?
It's called the developing bag.
Yeah.
No, it's called the change bag.
Oh, jeez. Well, that makes sense.
Well, you're changing film. Yeah. You know what? I don't know why it's called a change bag. It should be called a loading bag.
Okay. Or developing bag.
But we change. My first experience with it was, well, actually my second experience was just loading up 16 millimeter film, like movie film. And that's when you're changing reels. So I guess that's why it's called a change bag. But great story, Alan.
Yeah.
Yeah, write that one down.
Moving along.
Yeah. That's the first thing. There's no dark room.
Right.
Unless you're going to make prints, which we're not. Not right now. I might down the road. For now, it's we're processing the film and we're staying digital.
So what we did...
Yes.
...is we took the film out of the camera, right? And then we had to go through and take it and put it in the little... bucket where we're going to develop it all in the dark, so we didn't expose the film, right?
Slow down, Mr. Science.
No, but I mean, for the layperson who's probably shooting digital and has probably not done this and maybe never will, that's the way I looked at it. I understand. I have a fairly good understanding of digital film or photography, but completely no background in this film world at all.
Right.
And to me, what happened is we took the roll out, right? Mm-hmm. And you're not exposing it when you take the roll out of the camera.
Because what kind of film are we shooting?
I don't know.
Size. What size?
35.
35 millimeter.
Yeah.
And so it comes in the cartridges.
Right.
Not all film does.
Okay.
You know, if you're shooting large format, you have to load it into the backs. And But yeah, we shot 35mm. So,
which is the most common, right? That's what most people would be shooting?
Yeah, that's before, I mean, that's before we moved to digital. That's what most people had. I mean, there were smaller versions. There was the, who cares?
Yeah. Okay, so 35mm, it's got a cartridge.
So we wind it back in the camera.
Right.
Now, my move is to wind it back almost all the way. So I listen very carefully because it's a hand crank on this old camera.
Yeah.
A lot of the newer cameras are an automatic. As soon as you get to the end,
it winds.
It zips back. Okay. And will wind all the way into the cartridge, at which point you then have to have pliers in the change bag
to pull it out.
Pull the bottom off of the can and then take the film out. Okay. But I like to avoid that, especially for new guys, because loading film in, well, you tell me what it was like to load film on, because you have to load it onto the reel.
Yeah, it was tricky.
Okay, so
sum it up by saying tricky.
It was tricky. Yeah. But you got to do a test run.
Yes.
Fortunately, I had a half roll that I had messed up earlier in the week. And so you got to do a test run outside of the change bag.
Yes. So you sort of showed me what I was going to do so I could get a visual of what it would look like when I had no visual when I was inside the bag.
Right.
So I did a test run first, looking at it, and then we did it in the bag where you have to do the rest of it by feel. And right. Definitely more difficult removing the visual cues.
It gets easier. Like anything else, like with practice, like I remember the first time I probably ever did it, it takes a couple minutes. And, you know, people make all kinds of contorted faces because it's, oh God, here's my pictures.
Yeah.
That I've laboriously taken, and now I'm going to wreck them by touching them with my sweaty hands.
Right.
And I can't get it on here now. What? But after a while, like it takes, I can do it in less time than it takes me to set up your tent.
No.
Yeah.
We should do a side-by-side of that.
Oh, that would be a riveting video.
Would be.
Yeah.
I don't think you could do it.
Okay.
I'll set up the tent in the backyard at the same time that you load the film.
I don't think it'll fit in your backyard.
And we could do a split screen. No, it'll barely fit in my backyard.
Yeah, we'll do. Actually, that would be kind of funny to see if that... I'll sit in the tent and do it. That's how we'll do that. In a light tight. Okay, so anyway, so we have to load it on there because we'd load it on the reel, and that reel then goes into a light tight developing tank.
I call it a box.
It's
not square, though.
Once again, Dr. Science... it's not a box. It's a round box. Yeah. From that Timberlake song.
Yeah.
Anyways. So once it's in there, then we can take it out of the change bag.
Right.
So now, because we have a light tight box, light tight but not liquid tight.
Right. Because we dumped liquid in there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. After we got in there, there was liquid.
So that's what we ended up having to do, is get it on that reel, into the tank, seal the tank shut, boom. Out of the change bag.
Yeah, because now we're fine.
Now it's game on. So what happened then? Once it's in the light tight tank, what's the first thing we did? Do you remember?
There's two kinds of chemicals. Or maybe we rinsed the film. Did we rinse the film?
We did. Yeah. We got the film prepped.
Yeah.
The film comes with like an anti-reflective layer.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to swell that up and get that off of there.
So we poured some water in there, swished it around a little bit, and then dumped that out.
Yep. So a couple minutes of a pre-wash. In the tank, and then dump that right down the drain.
Right.
That is fine to go down the drain.
Now the film is washed.
Now it's washed and ready to go. Now what?
Then there are two types of chemicals. This is going back like a week and a half, so I don't remember what they're called, but one was a developer.
We start with a developer.
Yeah.
Here's where we develop the film.
Yeah.
Now we measured this out ahead of time. We pre-mixed it. In our scientific cranberry juice container.
Right.
Which I think we'll see, actually. One of the photos, I took a photo of my developing kit, which is a complete, basically scrabbled together from stuff that my dad got at the recycle depot.
Awesome.
So I don't have any graduated cylinders. I just kind of go by eye, and why not? I don't use a meter, so I might as well just use the chemicals by eye.
And the developer is the really toxic one, right?
Yeah. You wouldn't want
to drink that.
Oh, no, you don't want to drink that or spill it on your hands. Normally you wear gloves, but Adam's a big macho man. No, I don't wear gloves either. I'm just very, very careful. I do recommend that people wear gloves. I recommended you did, and then you said, don't worry, you're not liable. And I won't wear them. And so you didn't spill.
Right,
didn't spill. So I'm very careful, especially, and I never, when you say that, like these chemicals are very toxic. So I don't keep them in the house. Like when,
right.
when we're in Germany, they're locked away in a separate area. Like so, my kid can't get down there and play. You know,
chemist. You put them next to your guns.
Yeah, I put them right next to. Yeah, yeah. I don't even know where you're going with that. That's that's just creepy.
Okay.
So I keep those locked away, and then I don't actually process, because she's only one, I don't process any film until she's in bed, because I don't want her, you know, interrupting, or maybe she needs something or whatever, and I got film hands.
Oh, you don't want that.
You don't want that. So I only do that at night, when it's, you know, mommy and me time. So she loves it. Why don't you go watch television while I develop film? So
you're still in the honeymoon phase.
Oh, it's awesome. So yeah, so we use the developer. We, again, like you said, is very toxic. So we mixed that out in the garage, brought that in.
And then you looked up, you had some app to look up how long, because I guess, you know, how long you leave the developer in is important based on what kind of film we had. So I remember you looking up something on your iPod.
I looked, there's a website called Mass Dev Chart, which means mass, I don't know, you figure it out.
Okay.
And they have, because if you're doing all kinds of different developing times, like if you want to pull your film, push your film, mix developers, like, you know, Kodak obviously wants you to shoot Kodak film and use Kodak developer and all that. But if you don't, like I do here, but in Germany I use something called Rodinal, which is this other developer, very, very cheap, awesome, love it. So it's a mix and match. You can mix and match, but times are going to vary.
So that's what you're looking up.
That's what I was looking up, to see what our developing time was.
Based on the film and the developing chemicals you're using.
And the dilution, because we had, you know, how much water did we put in the chemicals? In this case, it was a 1-to-1. So half was developer, half was water.
It's all very riveting information.
Yes, and don't worry, I'll write this all down in your first blog post. Signed Adam.
So then we did that. We timed it out and we switched the chemicals.
How long was that? How long did
it was about 9 minutes and 45 seconds. I don't know why exactly I remember that, but I remember numbers. I'm good with numbers.
It was 9:45.
Yeah.
So we dump the chemicals in. We start by agitating it.
Yes.
For about 30 little, seconds.
Which is basically swirling it.
Swirling it. Yeah. We have a cooler name for it than swirly. And then we do that for 3 seconds every minute.
Right.
Until it's time.
Yeah.
And then when the 9 minutes and 45 seconds is up,
we dumped it.
Where?
In a special... Didn't we dump it back in the bottle because we could use that? No, that was the stuff that we had to get rid of.
Developer's one shot only.
Okay, so the developer went in the developer container that's going to go to a special chemical dump site or in your backyard, whichever comes first?
Yeah, just in the field behind my house. I'll dump it out there. No, I don't know.
Because
actually,
there's a school there, so it's just children playing.
Yeah, they'll sort it out. I'm pretty sure they know what to do with it. No, actually, I don't actually know the rules in Canada. Like, is in Germany, you can't dump it. In certain places, you can, depending on the municipal sewer system. I just haven't checked that out yet. So right. I do keep a spent developer container.
Right. Right next to your daughter's playthings.
Yeah, yeah. Right next to it. Of course. It's in her. I put it next to her sandbox. So, no, again, that is locked away. I actually put that in a bucket, so if something goes wrong, because that also is a cranberry container. That's how low rent I am. I didn't buy anything. You don't have to.
Great.
So, but I do keep those. Actually, those are in buckets as well. So if something lets go, it's not going to spill all over the floor. So that we dump that out.
And after then, that,
now what do we do?
There's another chemical that we put in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what
it was. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen.
Just water?
Or wait, is it two part oxygen, one part hydrogen?
Two hydrogens.
Is it?
Isn't it?
Google it.
H2O?
Whatever. I forget how it goes. Anyways, we have to do what's called a stop bath.
So we watered it down for a little while? How long do we do that?
It's only about a minute.
Okay.
So what we have to do at that point is stop the developer from developing.
Right.
Because if we don't... Even if we dump the chemicals out and just leave
it. Still on the film.
It's going to keep going.
Okay.
And it's going to eat your film up and it'll be nothing left. It's just going to be gone.
I don't have recollection of watering it after that, but now that makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I still can't remember what the name of the next chemical is that went in after that water.
Okay. So we do a 1 minute stop bath of water. Dump that down the drain. That's fine to go down the drain. And then we have to somehow basically fix the film.
Fixer. Oh, it's called Fixer.
Genius.
Yeah.
Whoever named that knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we use a Fixer for about 5 minutes.
And that wasn't as toxic, so we drank that.
We did drink that. Yeah. Tastes a lot like mint.
mint and burning.
We did not. We did, in fact, whenever you do this, I don't think I told you this, but whenever you do, like, you know, maybe you'll have coffee or something while you're doing it, you never have your coffee area near the chemicals. Like, right. You have like a wet area, that's that. Nothing. You don't bring the chemicals out, you don't bring other stuff in, because it's very simple. You know, you could confuse things.
Okay.
And have a sip, and you don't want to do that.
Right.
So the developer, or the, sorry, the Fixer now, we need to basically harden the film to keep that image on there.
Right.
So we use the Fixer, 5 minutes, roughly.
And we're swirling it again.
Again, doing the swirl. And then the good news about Fixer is you can use it over and over.
So we poured it, after we were done, we poured that back into the fixing container.
Correct. Now, you can't use it forever and ever. You can use it a bunch of times. So we poured it back. What did we use to get it into the container?
A funnel?
A funnel. I asked this for a very specific reason. How many funnels do I use?
I would think you have one for each kind of chemical.
Hang on a second. Let me try to ask that more condescendingly.
is that important? So for those of us who are just itching to go out and do this on our own,
mm-hmm.
you should get a funnel for each kind of chemical.
I end up buying a 3-funnel set because for whatever reason they come in sets of 3. And I toss the little one. I don't need it. Yeah. In the backfield with the chemicals. no, I you have two. One because, I just touched your foot.
Barefoot on barefoot.
And we've hit a new low.
Why was your foot wet?
Anyways, if you get a drop of developer into your fix, your fixer, that batch is gone. You can toss it. It'll okay. ruin it. So you don't ever want to get even a drop. So you have two separate funnels, and you label them accordingly. So okay. there's that. That's a tip. So that's it. Once we're done that, we dump it back in, we wash it off, and we toss the... Now we can pop it open.
And now the film is safe.
Film is safe about 30 seconds into the fix, but you still want to fix it for 5 minutes.
Okay.
At that point, you pull it out, drop it in water, and let it sit for at least 10 minutes to wash. Wash all the chemicals away. At that point...
Then we hung it up. Hung it to dry.
Hung it up to dry. We hung it up... how? Up and down.
Yeah, up and down, and you kind of put a clip on the bottom so that it would hang straight.
Yep.
So a little... You weighted it at the bottom so that, so that the film would... Because otherwise it would curl up.
Correct.
Don't want that.
Don't want that.
And that was it.
That was it. Now you had film.
Yeah.
And so what was it like when, well, first of all, just describe your, did you enjoy the whole process?
Not particularly.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you the part that I did enjoy. I enjoyed taking the photos. I enjoyed, you know, the labor that went into trying to, you know, understand that you had a limited number of chances here in terms of, you know, getting the exposure. We're only taking whatever we took 18 pictures each. And so I put a little bit more time into making sure that the exposure was as good as I thought it could be. And then I really enjoyed, you know, the aftermath. Seeing the pictures on the film was quite neat. Like, so when we actually got to the end of the processing itself, I could do without. I'd be happy if I just pulled it out of the camera and the pictures were there. I'll be honest, that would have been great if it was just, you know, oh, hey, here they are, and then I hung them up. That part would have been great. So fast forward to the good part. But then I really enjoyed, you know, looking at the end result. So I enjoyed looking through the film itself and seeing it right on the film. I thought that was quite neat. And then ultimately when you scan the photos, and I don't know how much detail you've kind of talked in the past about your post-processing, how you get it from on the film to on the computer. But then when you emailed me the pictures and I saw the result, I really enjoyed that part. And again, there's a different look to the black and white film than I think I can achieve in a black and white conversion from right. from my camera. So
do you think that going through that whole process, like just taking a long time to take the photos and then having to load the film and do the processing, that entire experience, do you think that would then translate into taking better photos the next time out, knowing that you have all this effort to go into it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, right. I think so. I don't know that I could have taken any more time to take my actual photos, because that part I kind of took my time with. But I definitely think it gives you the idea of, yeah, I better, you know, really want to take this picture, because now there's a lot that goes into it after.
Right. So let's have a look at some of your pictures, if we can do that. So here, I just chose five. We can talk about any ones you want.
I noticed you didn't include the one that I took of your wife with your daughter hanging upside down, which I quite liked. Any reason you didn't include
that?
Let's
bring it up. You can talk about that one first.
I don't think you have it in. I mean, unless you have it in the other box.
Oh, I'm sure we have it. That's good. This is riveting podcasting.
Yeah, no,
now.
I really like that photo. Yeah, I like that photo.
So that's my daughter's the one upside down.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I like that photo. That was the photo that kind of came to mind, because it was, again, a unique pose. Mm-hmm. But as far as a black and white photo goes, it's kind of, I don't know, there's not a huge amount of contrast in the picture, so it's kind of grayscale, but I think the exposure is good.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's look at the couple of the ones that I think lend themselves to black and white a little bit better. And here's part, like the one of my wife, very much like the exposure of the one of your wife and daughter. So not that much to scream about, other than I think the exposure looks decent, but
She's in focus.
And that was what we talked about. I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to have hit focus, because this whole manual focusing thing to me and my eyes not being that great, I have a bit of an astigmatism. So my left and right eye, when I'm doing the manual focus, I don't have a lot of trust in focus. So I was trying to use the distance as a gauge for focus rather than my eye.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think most of the pictures I took were in focus, maybe save one or two. So I was impressed with that. But I think this gives me a little bit of an appreciation of what is black and white, because when I take it in digital, I can play with the blues and the greens and to make it look like I want it to look like,
right,
as opposed to here, you take it and then it is what it is.
Right? You can mess with it somewhat after. I mean, you can do all those things as well, but for the most part, you pick a horse at the beginning and you go with it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think when I see a picture like the flowers that I took, and these are just our neighbor's flowers, I look at that and I'm like, oh, that looks good, because you've got the contrast, which, again, lends itself to black and white a little bit better than all the grays and the middle tones. So I like that photo.
See, earlier on, what had happened is I watched you taking a picture, and I let you take one of a flower that was, let's just call it a red flower against the green grass.
Yeah.
Now, so I know what's going to end up happening. I know you're going to get a gray flower against the gray grass.
Right.
That's why I recommended later on, well, why don't you try this white flower and see, just to see the difference in, you know, what comes out in the contrast.
Right.
So there's a good example. Again, in focus.
Yes.
And this one was taken, you know, at the f-stop. I mean, oftentimes if you're shooting at f16 and you miss focus, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
This one was much narrower than that, and you still nailed it. So you should have a little more self-confidence.
There you go. And there's one of my kids. Again, kind of a, I mean, it's a fine picture. Something that I'm sure kind of looks like the pictures that, the eight photos that my parents took of me when I was a kid. So it kind of looked like,
and they were all the same day.
Yeah, and they didn't develop them themselves either. So yeah, so no, though that sort of looks like the standard picture taken 20 years ago. So I kind of like it. It has a bit of a nostalgic feel.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the background, not a lot of thought went into it. It was kind of like, hey, my kids are standing over there and I got 18 pictures to take. I'm going to take one.
Yeah.
So that's that picture. And what else? Oh, and I like that. The sunflowers.
Yep.
Assuming, I don't know a lot about flowers, but I think those are sunflowers. So I think, again, there's a good contrast there, because those flowers are popping out from
the
background.
Yeah, I'm going to say those are daisies.
You're right, because they're white. Because if it was yellow, it would blend in more.
Also,
right?
Sunflowers are about 15 times the size and have seeds that I eat when I play baseball.
But you can't tell how big those are. Those could be as big as your head.
Yeah, it's not. And
you didn't include the picture of your head. Remember, I took that picture of your
head.
That
wasn't a good one.
No, but no. I was wondering if the black and white would pick up the gray. And I didn't really.
No.
Picked up the reflection off your head, though.
Yeah.
So let's look at your photos, because maybe you can...
Oh, there's a self-portrait I want to talk about.
What, you're going to talk about that?
No.
No.
I also want to show people that.
You're going to... Yeah.
Maybe you can see a self-portrait.
The reflection of my head.
I think it's actually a pretty good shot.
Really?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's
see. Here's something I took. What we had you do is you shot half the roll.
Right.
And I finished the roll off myself, so we have a little compare and contrast.
Right.
And so... yeah, there's my daughter being a hoser.
Right. I didn't even think of that.
But neither did I till just now.
Wow.
So there's
really
that.
Think on your feet.
That's how I do.
In the second hour of the program.
Yeah.
You're just getting warmed up.
Oh, yeah. This is just the... Are you even recording? I don't think this is going to make the show. Yeah, so again, I like to look for high contrast situations when I'm shooting black and white film.
Right.
For some reason, like I could be way off here, but I happen to like bright sunlight, like hard light. I like hard light in black and white. Now that might just be a personal choice, but that's something I look for because it really shows up. Now with this film, what I do notice is the shadows still show up. You still got a lot of detail in the shadows. Even though it's a digital scan, we still hold a lot of detail, and that's what I like. What else do we got? Here's my developing kit. So you can see here, again, there's a lot of sunlight coming in to the garage. There's my spent dev. The big bottle is my spent developer. The other one's the one I mix the developer in, the cranberry juice container.
Right.
And there's my funnel, clearly labeled dev. For developer, not fix.
Right.
And, for fixer.
And right next to that big one, is that your daughter's water bottle?
Yep. That's it there with the sippy cup. Yeah. You know, some people would think that telling that joke 8 times might be too many.
That's how we do it.
But here we are. Well, I don't know if it's we. I don't know if I was flogging that horse.
Right.
But yeah, don't worry. We got like 2 more in the show notes. Just look down here at the bottom and make fun of the chemicals in my daughter's sippy cup. Ha 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 ha. Don't worry, it'll come back around and be funny.
The best part is that nobody's listening.
That's right. And just
your
to
dad's
show you,
drill bits.
Just to show you, you know what? That's, I just like the way the light was flashing off that, and plus, this symbolizes the fact that this is still boring. I love that joke. Whenever I'm out in the shop with my dad and we're drilling, I always just say that this is boring.
He loves that.
He loves it. Because boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whenever my wife says...
it's also boring.
How come you don't vacuum? And I always say, it sucks.
Great. That's she another crowd pleaser.
Oh, in Germany it kills. That's a good one. So, no, again, it's a high contrast situation. I was looking for like the light glinting off there, off the drill bit, and being dark in the background. So, that's it.
I like the knob.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull that out of context. That's gonna be, hey, just got a new cold open.
Yeah.
Hey, good times.
All right.
Well, that's it for film. Anything to add?
No, I think we added it.
Are
already.
You gonna shoot any more film?
I might. I'm not. I'm probably just gonna take it to the local spot that they develop it at, though.
You might.
Yeah.
It's not too expensive to get just the film processed. It's about $6 a roll here in Vancouver. If you want prints made, then it gets expensive because not a lot of people do them. So you can figure on a 36 roll film. By the time you buy the film, processing and prints, you're looking at around $36 or $40.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
I could buy you for that.
You can and sell. Buy and sell. Yeah. But when you do it yourself, it doesn't cost very much at all. Like, it costs pennies to do the processing. Once you have the developing kit, and as you can see, I mean, I bought the tank and the change bag, and the rest I scrounged from the local recycling depot, which you can do. I highly recommend doing that. And after that, it's really pennies to process. It's just your own time. Which I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
There you go. That's Adam in the Dark Room.
I enjoy being married.
Right. There's a callback. Good. Good callback. Yeah.
All right.
My wife likes black and white film photos, so.
So we're even.
Yeah, it all comes out in the wash. So that's it. Next week's challenge.
Did you have one?
No, I don't have one. This is where the show breaks down.
No, I thought I suggested one prior to us starting.
Yeah, but
you don't like that one?
That doesn't really appeal to our worldwide base.
No, it absolutely does.
You think other people are going to take pictures of Canadiana?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what you think Canadiana is.
Okay.
I'm assuming we're going to get a lot of lumberjack photos.
Toques.
Maple syrup.
Yeah, beavers.
What are you going to shoot?
I don't know, it's a surprise.
Oh, big surprise ending. Okay, that's it. This week's challenge is Canadiana.
So it's anything. So for those that don't know, anything that they think is Canadian.
I like to hear your interpretation of, of Canadian.
Maple Leafs.
Well, in Eastern Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
The Leaf.
Oh, the Leaf itself. I thought you meant the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, it could be.
Okay. That's it. Okay, so until then, where can people see all your tractor photos and what have you?
SchwartzChronicles.com.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Maybe on our blog, thetwohosers.com blog. Do we have a name for it? I'm not posting anything until I have a name for my spot.
Adam's Corner.
Yes. That's great. Can't believe you just thought of that.
I just touched your foot again. I feel like your foot is on my side.
It isn't at all, and I haven't moved. You're moving in and out.
Lisa, Adam touched my foot again.
And where can we find your stuff?
AlanEtridge.com, or both of us at the Two Hosers. I did it again. No the.
Just Two Hosers.
TwoHosers.com, and on Twitter and all that stuff is available there. We're at Two Hosers on Twitter. We're at Two Hosers down at the 7-Eleven. If you just ask the guy there.
They know. They know. Find us in the back.
He's in the back, filling up the water bottles. Yeah. That's what they do here. With hoses.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the hosing.
Yeah, right.
That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.